This is Stateside. I'm April Baer.
This week's news cycle has been pretty short on good financial news. The U.S. economy plunged by a record-shattering 32.9% last quarter. There are still millions of people out of work because of the pandemic. But Daniel House has found that things could be worse for the auto industry. He's a columnist and associate business editor at the Detroit News, and he talks to us now and then about automotive news. Daniel House, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So what do we know at this point about how many of Michigan's assembly plants are online?
Oh, I think pretty much all of them are online. They need to get moving. They have been moving. GM has been increasing some shifts in some of its plants. I know in Fort Wayne, Indiana, it's truck plants. Wentzville, Missouri, they had some issues. They were taking off a shift, then they added the shift back on. Ford seems to be running fairly consistently. We haven't really heard any issues there. FCA has had some concerns about COVID in the plants. They've been able to manage it and continue to move forward. You know, the UAW president has had to, my understanding, has had to talk to some of their folks and say, you need to help me out here. You can't have people complaining about COVID issues in the plants and then going across the street to the union hall and hanging out without masks and drinking beers.
Right.
So, you know, it's that kind of thing. But I think in general, they're moving ahead and moving along. I did get an email after I wrote a column from a GM worker who said that, let's just say that there were some other things going on in the plants, but it's very hard to look at one source and make anything much out of it.
You know, I was taking a look at the news out of Mexico, and it looks like the coronavirus is still just really, really severe there. What kinds of supplier issues out of the country are the big three dealing with?
Well, there have been concerns coming right up to the restart that Mexico was going to be a problem. One of the things that General Motors said in its quarterly earnings calls yesterday was they think that the second half for them could be pretty darn good, that they could generate between $7 billion and $9 billion in cash, begin to pay down the $16 billion credit line that they opened when the pandemic began. But one of the things that they conditioned that on was that there's not supplier disruption. And that continues to be a concern. It's always a concern. It was a concern in China when China was exploding with COVID, and all the manufacturers pretty much managed to continue to maintain production because they have fail-safes and backup. They get sourcing on various components from two different geographic points. So if you have a problem in, say, China, you can get it from other Asian producers in other markets, and they have backups in North America as well.
Yeah, you know, a few weeks ago, Governor Whitmer was saying that she'd have to shut down the auto plants if people wouldn't wear their masks in public. I'm not exactly sure what the link was there. Can you tell whether that statement, you know, made any measurable difference? I was curious to know what the automakers thought of that, too.
Well, number one, I don't think you're going to see the automakers take on a governor publicly if they have issues. It doesn't benefit anybody. But I think privately, look, the reality is if these companies are not running their plants, they are losing enormous sums of money. I think you're going to see that Ford Motor Company is going to say that they've lost about $5 billion in the quarter. These are very large numbers. And, you know, if these companies are not producing vehicles and their vehicles are not going out into the marketplace, you know, they could literally run out of cash. Ford says they have enough cash to get through 2020. Well, think about that. You know, we're more than halfway through the year. These companies hemorrhage money when they are not operating. So it is very important for them to continue to operate their plants, and we should take it as a good sign that they're adding shifts. Now, General Motors went into this pandemic down. They endured a strike. Their inventories were low. So this is an opportunity for them to run their lines to inflate their inventory around the country. But I think, you know, they believe that they can run efficiently and safely. I think they would say to the governor, we've got it handled here. Don't punish us because, you know, some people are out at the Jobby Nooner out, you know, on the east side of Detroit having a party in the boats.
Yeah, I saw that column that you published this week about GM's quarterly earnings from that period that was the extremely slowest part so far of the pandemic. What gears do you see Mary Barra finding during the downturn?
Well, I continue to be impressed with her decisiveness. She makes some hard-nosed decisions and is disciplined. I've covered General Motors all over the world since the mid-90s, so I've kind of seen the old GM up close. I've seen the new GM, And these guys are very nimble. They're hard-headed. They don't make all the right calls. They don't all make all the right product calls. I mean, I recently wrote about, you know, how the Ford Bronco has totally eclipsed anything that the GM did with their Chevy Blazer when they revived that. And I think they probably made the wrong call, and I think they recognize that. But, you know, that's one product. But in general, I think dealing with crises, she's very good and very decisive. And they only lost $800 million in the quarter, which is pretty remarkable.
sentence, Dan.
when you're talking about
yes.
Everything is in billions, right?
Right.
Everything
right.
is in billions. You know, you kind of come away going, wow. And you think as long as you can keep operating, you're going to generate between $7 and $9 billion in cash in the second half of the year. That's pretty remarkable. And the other thing is that they'd cut salaries for, like, I don't know, 65,000-70,000 salaried workers, and they're rescinding those cuts for most people ahead of schedule, and they're going to pay them interest on top of the money that they owe them. So I think it's quite an interesting story, but the problem with General Motors is it's never enough in the marketplace. I mean, this news came out and the shares traded down. So then it becomes, well, what about your electrification strategy? How are you going to compete with Tesla? It's never enough.
Yeah. Well, and that is, I mean, it's so funny that we were hearing so much about electrification, and now it looks like that's one of the areas where sales have really slowed down. It's so weird. I feel like I was reading about a month ago that everybody ramping up production, and now it seems like everything's slow again except for used cars. Yes.
No, I think, you know, we're running at about I think they want to run 14 million units are. That's another thing. I mean, used to be, but you get 14, 13 million annual selling rate. These companies are losing enormous amounts of money. Their break-even points are a lot lower now, so they're able to make money in a slower market, which is very encouraging. So we're not seeing the economic devastation, at least coming from the auto companies, that we would have in a similar environment 10 or 15 years ago.
In the meantime, it looks like you've been really busy in your copious leisure hours reading federal court filings from the UAW corruption case.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty eye-opening column that you published a couple weeks back. Could you lay out what you learned about the man who was essentially the money driving the scandal, Fiat Chrysler CEO Sergio Marchionne?
Oh, goodness. How much time do you have? my colleague Robert Snell and I have been after this story for 3 years, and it's pretty remarkable. You know, we did a piece at the end of last year called Driven by Greed. It basically lays out how this case had developed and come together, and it really started some of the corruption and the payments to UAW officials goes back to just the few weeks after Chrysler emerged from bankruptcy with federal money, and they began a process of essentially buying favor with union leaders. There is some allegations and is some evidence that Sergio Marchionne, who died a couple years ago, was part of this. He obviously was never charged. Don't know if he ever would have been charged, but ultimately the contention is that ultimately this was part of a strategy, at least that evolved, and ultimately he was trying to take over General Motors and to force a merger. And General Motors recently, some of your listeners may recall, filed a racketeering lawsuit against Fiat Chrysler, alleging that they had tried to corrupt the union to then force a merger with General Motors.
As you noted, I mean, this case under other circumstances might have been front page news for weeks. Why do you think it hasn't gotten more attention this summer?
Well, it has been front page news in the Detroit News.
Right.
We have covered this very aggressively, very consistently for probably 3 years. Rob has done a lot of groundbreaking work on this. I've worked with him on a lot of these things. We've had other of our auto writers who've been involved in it. I will tell you this. I have had conversations with members of national news organizations who have offices in Detroit who've commented on our work to us and said that they have tried to tell their bosses in New York, we need to cover this story, and the bosses in New York say nobody cares. So you have a national news media that is largely just kind of watched from the sidelines as we've done some of this work, but their folks in New York have kind of come to the conclusion that nobody cares about the UAW and corruption and who gives a rip. I find that to be exceedingly short-sighted. The United Auto Workers is a cornerstone of the modern American auto industry. It is an institution. It was very involved. Its leaders were very involved in the civil rights movement, particularly Walter Reuther. It has always been a leading organization in American labor. And it also had a reputation historically for being a, quote, clean union. It wasn't the Teamsters. It wasn't these other unions whose leaders had pilfered money, and it didn't behave. And for a long, long, long time, that was true, more or less. It's been in the last decade, under a succession, really two presidents in a row, that things badly got off the rails. And you had the Justice Department, through the U.S. Attorney, begin this investigation. It was initially, I believe, begun by Barbara McQuaid, who was nominated by President Obama, and then continued by Matthew Schneider.
On the upside, I'm looking forward to the book that the Detroit News staff is going to publish on this eventually. Dan, thank you so much.
You bet.
Daniel House of the Detroit News talks to us about the automotive industry.